It's on Church Bible, page 620. A song of Ascents. In my distress, I called to the Lord, and He answered me. Deliver me, O Lord, from lying lips, from a deceitful tongue. What shall be given to you, and what more shall be done to you, you deceitful tongue? A warrior struck arrows with glowing coals of the broom tree. Woe to me that I sojourn in Mashur, that I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Too long have I had my dwelling among those who had peace. I am for peace, but when I speak, they are for war.
Thank you, Joy. Keep a marker in Psalm 120, although we shall be moving around from other passages of Scripture before we get back to it. But we shall be coming back to Psalm 120. When Jesus was 12 years old, his parents took him on a 120-mile hike. That's the distance from Galilee to Jerusalem and back. And they went on foot. And presumably they camped out, or stayed at inns, or camped out in the inn courtyards on their way up to Jerusalem to the Passover, which was the celebration, the memorial of the time when God had delivered his people, had saved his people and set them free, and sent them off on the long march, the 40 years march across the wilderness to the promised land. Many Jews made this trip to attend the Passover. Some made it yearly. And we know from the other Gospels that Jesus made this trip at other times. The last time he went up to the Passover, he didn't come back because he was going to his death. It was an annual pilgrimage, a time of holiday and religious festival, camping out in the fields. And singing the songs that we will be studying and reading over the next 5 weeks or so, which are called the Songs of Ascent because they were sung by Jews who were going up to Jerusalem to worship God, to join in this great festival celebrating the salvation that God brought for the Jewish people. Psalm 122, which we'll be studying afterwards, but I'll just take a verse or two from there. Right at the beginning, the psalmist says, I was glad when they said to me, let us go up to the house of the Lord. Let's go. It's time to go. And from every town and city and farm and all these other places in Judea and in Samaria and further north than that, wherever there were Jews, they went up to worship. They went on a pilgrimage, a journey. But it was a spiritual journey as well as a geographical journey. And in the next few weeks we shall be discovering what it means to be on a spiritual journey, both then and now. Because if we belong to God, if we belong to Jesus Christ, we are on a spiritual journey. A popular term these days, a rather sort of vague and woolly term, my spiritual journey. I want to focus it a bit make it focused and grounded in what the Bible teaches about spiritual journeys. When we read of pilgrims in the Bible, we get all sorts of references to people in the Old Testament. The Exodus, the great spiritual journey from Egypt to the Promised Land. The people who returned from exile in Babylon and went back to Jerusalem. A huge, long journey. A kind of pilgrimage, the same. And these were geographical journeys, but they were illustrations of a spiritual principle. And in speaking of people on a spiritual journey, the writer to the Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 13, page 1121, says this about people who were on a spiritual journey. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 13, page 1121. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Here we have the heart of the spiritual journey, the spiritual pilgrimage. A going out, a turning, if you like, your back on the things where you are, looking for a better country, trusting in the God who has called you there and has prepared you for this place. And that is what a spiritual journey is about. Where does a spiritual journey start? A lot of people speak about spiritual journeys, you know, going around searching this way and that, trying one thing after another, trying to find out. There is one starting point for the spiritual journey that Jesus speaks about, and he speaks about it in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 13, page 979. And he says this: enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction, and those who enter it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few. You're in a minority. You're going to find difficulty if you start at the right starting point. And the starting point is the narrow gate. There is no other. That's the starting point of a spiritual journey. Some people spend a long time searching for the starting point. I grant that. Try all sorts of things. But let me tell you, there is a starting point, and Jesus tells us where it is. It's the narrow gate. And Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me. He said, I'm the starting point of spiritual journeys. And that starting point is something where we see God intervene in our lives. If you like, it's not so much us finding the starting point, and God finding us at the starting point and setting us going from that point onwards. Because it is as we are saved, as we accept the new life that Jesus offers, if we accept the forgiveness that Jesus offers, and when we do these things, that we enter on the way that leads to life. And there's a huge contrast here, isn't it? Jesus says, the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many people who walk along it. And the way is narrow that leads to life, and those that find it are few. So you're going to be in a minority. And you're going to have a difficult path to walk, says Jesus. But he said it's the way that leads to life. It's a wonderful way. But there's only one way to start out on it, and that's through the gate that Jesus supplied. When the people of Israel started on their great march to the promised land of Exodus, that began with a saving work of God. God struck the Egyptians. He defeated the Egyptians. He made a way through the Red Sea so that the people could be set free and delivered from the power of the Egyptians and set free to go to the land that God had prepared for them. It was a saving act of God that started their spiritual pilgrimage. And that's the same today. And it begins when we receive the new life look at page 1163, 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 17. If anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. Part of our new life is entering onto a spiritual journey with Jesus Christ. It's not an option. It's the way it is. Jesus said, I am the way and the truth and the life. And that's the journey that many of us all have already started upon. And it is a good thing for us to understand a little bit about the journey and understand where we're going. Because sometimes we enter in on things without really understanding too much about them. And these Psalms of Ascent and this focus on spiritual pilgrimage will help us to see where we're going, what it's like to be going, and where we're going to. And so let's turn back to Psalm 120 and look at some of the things that the psalmist became aware of as he began his spiritual pilgrimage. And the first thing was, he was aware of God's deliverance. In my distress I called to the Lord and he answered me. Three things that he had learned here. One, that there is a God. He prayed to God. Maybe he knew God already, maybe he didn't. But he found out that God was a God who answered. The reality of a God who is powerful, who answers prayer. And he found that God could deliver us from evil. He could intervene in our life circumstances and make them different. God was at work in this world, acting on behalf of people who trusted him. In my distress, I called on the Lord and he answered me. And then he asked God, deliver me, O Lord, from lying lips and from a deceiving tongue. He doesn't speak anything more about it than that. We don't know very much about the details of what the pressures were that he was under at the time. And there is another psalm, which is very similar and rather a parallel psalm, which goes into a bit more explanation about what it's like to be under this kind of thing. And if you look at Psalm 64 on page 575, and we read a little bit of it, because it fills out a little bit of what the psalmist may have been thinking about at this time. So if we look at Psalm 65, sorry, not 65, 64. And let's read from the beginning. Hear my voice, O Lord, in my complaint, preserve my life from the dread of the enemy. Similar kind of thing to Psalm 120. Hide me from the secret places of the wicked, from the throng of evildoers, who whet their tongues like swords and aim bitter words like arrows, shooting from ambush at the blameless, shooting at them suddenly and without fear. They hold fast to their evil purpose. They talk of laying snares secretly, thinking, who can see them? They search out injustice, saying, we have accomplished a diligent search, for the inward mind and heart of a man are deep. But God shoots his arrow at them, they are wounded suddenly. They are brought to ruin, and their own tongues turned against them. The psalmist was seeing a whole lot of people speaking against him, plotting against him, seeking his downfall, because he knew that he was living in an alien world. And it's not unusual for people on a spiritual pilgrimage to be under attack from evil people. Jesus warned his disciples. He said, if they hated me, they hate you too. And when he was praying for his disciples in John chapter 17, on page 1069, he says about his disciples in praying for them, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not for them, as you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. Jesus said, my disciples, my people, they're in the world, they are under pressure, they are hated like I am hated. But God, protect them, preserve them, guard them, keep them, save them. And that's the situation that we are in. We're living in an alien world, a world that is alienated against God and therefore against people who follow God. We studied Pilgrim's Progress when we first came to this building about 2 years ago, and Antine read a series of readings from Pilgrim's Progress, which explains the spiritual journey of a man called Pilgrim. And he was living in a city called the City of Destruction, and he realized that that wasn't a good place to be. And he wanted to get out, and he wanted to escape from that place. And we read how he made his way. He realized that he was an alien and a stranger living in such a place, and he wanted to get out. And this is what the psalmist said here in 120, isn't it? The same. Woe to me that I sojourn at Meshech and I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Too long I have had my dwelling among those who hate peace. Hate peace. I am for peace. But when they speak, they are for war. I'm living in the wrong place. I need to get out. We don't get out straight away, but we head out. There's an old, it's not quite a Negro spiritual, but it's an American song, and you can't help saying it with an American sort of accent. This world is not my own, I'm just passing through. My treasure's all laid up way there beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's open door, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. And that was the spirit of it. I could sing it, but I won't sing it. But that's the spirit of the psalmist's feelings about where he was. But we know, because we have heard from Jesus, that he leaves us in the world to carry out his purposes. He wants us to take some people with us. He wants us to take a few worldlings along with us on our spiritual pilgrimage. And that's what Christ Church Central is all about. It's the church for people who don't go to church. It's the place where we welcome people to join this spiritual journey, beginning with Jesus and ending in heaven. And we want to bring some more people with us to do that. And we welcome anybody who considers that was the way to go, because that's where we're going. And we know it's a great place to go, because if we read about, I've been talking about the hardship of it and the enmity and that kind of thing. I want to read some words that really capture the heart when it speaks about the pilgrim way in Isaiah chapter 35. We turn to page 720 in the Bible, and chapter 35, we get a description of the pilgrim's highway. And this is what is written there. And the highway shall be there, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it. It shall be for those who walk on the way. Even if they are fools, they shall not go astray. No lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast go up on it. They shall not be found there. But the redeemed of the Lord shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be on their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall be no more. Here is the picture, a glorious and attractive picture of the way that Jesus has called us to walk along. It's the way of holiness. It's the way for the redeemed, people who have accepted God's salvation through Jesus Christ, are redeemed through his death, and only then. For those who have walked through that door and entered that door, and they shall return and come to Zion with singing. and everlasting joy will be on their heads. And we know that in our own joyful singing here, we are singing some of the songs of heaven. We sing them with gladness because we recognise them as that sure hope that we embrace as part of our pilgrimage. But this is a way that Jesus has commanded us to walk in. He says, enter in the narrow gate. I am the way. No one comes to the Father but by me. As I said before, it is a spiritual journey and not a geographical one. It's been easier for me, as I've served as a missionary overseas, to think of my life as a Christian, as a spiritual pilgrimage, because of some of the physical, geographical things that I've had to do, moving to Japan and Mongolia and various places. But that sort of thing is a caricature of a spiritual journey. It's nothing to do with moving about. You can stay in one place all your life and still go on a wonderful spiritual journey, beginning in the same place and ending in the same place. But since 1960, when we left home to go to Bible school, Sheila and I have moved house about 33 times, I think. We've actually had 33 different places that we've called home between 1960 and 2000. When we came back to retire in 2000, we've actually lived in our present flat longer than we've ever lived anywhere else since we got married, by quite a long way. And that helps you in thinking about a pilgrim life, because it helps you think about not keeping hold of possessions and setting your heart on the things that belong to this world, that tie you to this world in a way. And it's been a help to us to have that kind of a life, because it's helped us to understand a little bit more about Christian pilgrimage. And that, as far as I'm concerned, as far as we're concerned, that has not finished. Christian pilgrimage goes on to the end. There's no way in which you can back out on the way without denying God. And about 20 years ago, I wrote some verses about my own feelings about being a pilgrim and Christian pilgrimage, and I hadn't realised at that time that there was still a lot of things still that I hadn't worked, I hadn't experienced. I didn't know that within 5 years we'd be sent off to work in Mongolia. I didn't know that after we came back to retirement and, you know, a bit of a break, we get sent off to work in the church plant among you lot, and that's quite an interesting and exciting thing to be too. Those things are still in the future, but they're part of a spiritual pilgrimage. And so I wrote these words: a pilgrim has two homes, one left behind on setting out, the other still unknown. I long for both. Oh, how I yearn to find security, four walls, a house my own, an open door and welcome jubilant for celebration on a family day, a garden where the saplings I would plant grow to strong trees and grandchildren could play. These not for me. I have planted trees, others take the fruits. I have trimmed vines and seen in those dead shoots laid on the snow God's careful gardening, and my fond hopes lie dead. Where I have taught, bright churches rise and congregations sing while I move on to seek the yet unsought. True, there have been sweet flowers by the way, springs and delights, the love of friends, their homes. My children gathered all for holiday, provision for the way that daily comes, and one to share each day's pain and delight, and that's not given to all who walk this road. All these, not earned by any pilgrim right, but by the hand of God, in grace bestowed. Shall I turn back and stretch hands out to get you to stretch hands to retain things that would perish in my grasp unkind, or overload my pilgrim pack with gain, best once enjoyed, then thankful, left behind? I turn back at my peril, grasp to lose. What shall I choose? Let me follow, without turning on the way I've travelled far, as with spirits brightly burning, men were guided by a star. For the call is to the ending, and the promise of my Lord since the moment of my sending has not failed a single word. With him only to rely on, seek I where my soul belongs. In my heart ways to Zion, in my mouth are pilgrim songs. And at a sudden turning of the road, I shall see all, gain all, and singing come ransom to Zion's gates, and see my Lord crowned in her midst, my everlasting home. That's been a challenge to me, because I wrote it 20 years ago and there's a lot to go on. I've carried on since then, there'll be a lot to go on from now onwards. But these are the things that you learn as a pilgrim walking with God. And these are the things that remain the fixed object of our journey, and which we will share as fellow travellers. Everyone's journey is different. Certainly, I would not like to compare mine with anybody else's. Recently, in our Bible studies on Tuesdays, here we've been studying 2 Corinthians and reading some of the latter parts of Paul's testimony. He was talking about boasting about all the things that happened to him. You know, 5 times I received umpteen lashes, I've been shipwrecked at sea, I've had, you know, all these things happen to me. I said, well, yeah, okay, fine, okay, Paul, it happened to you, but it doesn't happen to happen to everybody in their Christian experience, in their Christian walk. All of us have a different sort of experience, and we shouldn't try and emulate anybody else, certainly not me or anybody else, because it is Christ we follow. But there are some commonalities about Christian walk. As we've already studied it, we all start at the same place: God's saving deliverance. And we all end at the same place: God's presence in heaven. We shall all have hardships and joyful blessing. We shall bring glory to God and bear fruit for his glory. It's not just a barren journey that we go on, just saying goodbye to everything, shutting ourselves up in the monastery or having no communication with anybody and just heading straight for heaven. God wants us to take some people with us. That's, I said before, that's what our church is about. And as we go on studying from the Psalms of Ascents, 121, 22, 23, 24 through to 25, we shall learn more things about this walk. Psalm 121, we shall learn that it's a journey made dependent on and receiving God's mercy and help. Psalm 122, it's a journey made in company with those who have the same goal. I was glad when they said to me, we will go up into the house of the Lord. Psalm 123, it's a journey made looking to God in obedient dependence. Psalm 124, it will be a journey when we can look back and see what God has done. I've done a little bit of looking back today with you. And that looking back helps us to focus on the future too, because the way still goes on. And it's been a journey made in the knowledge that we are a secure people in God's hand, going towards a certain goal. These are some of the Psalms of Ascent that we shall be going through up to 125. But it's not where the Psalms of Ascent ends. They go on. And I just want to quote a little bit from the end of Psalm 126. Because I think this would reflect perhaps some of the feelings that some of us have at this present time. 126, the end verses. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come home with shouts of joy, bearing his sheaves with him. See you there.